You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for joining us today. My name's Kent Swanson, the lead film and draft analyst for Arrowhead Pride. This is the AP Laboratory, and we are transitioning into off-season mode now. So it'll be free agency. It'll be coaching staff changes. It'll be the draft. Of course, it'll be the draft. Matthew Lane's on this.
You're welcome.
Real quick, guys. Craig and Matt are on here already. So I was reading the rundown, and I totally forgot, like, why aren't we leading with Mike Smith's exit? And we can it's the first question in the mailbag, but we'll get there in a minute, but like, this week's been so crazy that like we haven't talked since Mike Smith happened.
If I had editing power, no, we haven't at all. You know this already. I would have fixed it.
Yeah, we had to take Matt's ability to edit the Google Docs away from him because he just puts pictures of Breland Speaks and crocodiles in the middle of questions, and like, it's thrown me off so many times. I'm kind of Ron Burgundy, so like, if I will read what is in this thing, and it, that's why I have no problem saying Kenny went to Coke, because I just read it because it's there. So, you know, whatever.
You heard it, everyone. You put it, make your questions phrased in a way that Kent's gonna look dumb because he'll read
Please.
It.
It's really not hard to make me look dumb, though. Okay, fellas, I wanted to go here because, like, Steve Spagnuolo, he's hired. We had a podcast, one of my favorite podcasts that we've done, doing it from the car. That was a fun experience.
Twice.
I really
two and
enjoyed
a half
it.
Times.
Probably some of my favorite eps. What?
So we had to re-record.
Yeah, that's right. Because we had to re-record because Spagnuolo got hired. I wanted to talk about five free agents, that might make sense for the Chiefs here with Steve Spagnuolo. I'll hit it off. We have like five here. I'm gonna lead it off with this guy. So Brandon Graham's about to be 31 years old. He's coming off a 4-sack season. Even though he had a really high pressure rate, he was still very disruptive, had a lot of hurries. Brandon Graham, 30, is about to be 31 years old, but as far as pass rush juice, he's still got it. And he's going to be a really fascinating guy to kind of observe here in free agency because he's older, because, you know, what kind of team is going to, you know, pony up a big price tag on him. I don't know. And so Brandon Graham could be a guy that, you know, if the price is right, he would be a really nice, like, sub package rusher that the Chiefs might be able to get in a situation like that. I think that would be a guy that I'd be kind of interested to see, you know, if the price goes down, you know, I'm throwing him into the mix here.
How much would you pay for him?
So I was thinking about that, and like, I don't know. Like, some people are saying he's gonna make, like, some of the projections out there on SpotRack are like $15 million, and I'm just like, that's insane. But like, you know, if Alan Bailey made what, $8 million last year, like somewhere in that range, like if you got him on like a 1 year $8 million deal, like I think he would pay for himself with disruption, even if he's not on the field for, you know, a full-time role. So like something like that, man, I would think about like something around that range.
Do you think Philly wouldn't match that though? Like, do you think you could pull him away from that same deal in Philly with the same amount of money?
That's a big question. That's a fair question. Like, I think that's kind of around where things start getting a little bit more competitive. But at the same time, the Eagles are kind of up against the cap right now. Now they can alleviate themselves a little bit here with like Nick Foles, and there's a couple other moves they could make. But it's definitely a guy I'm keeping an eye on. Maddie, I think you had someone.
Yeah, so I got Adrian Amos, safety. He's coming out from the Bears, so he's going to be working on his second contract now. So he's still plenty young. He's kind of in his prime. My big thing with Amos is he's just an all-around kind of jack-of-all-trades safety, but when you hear that phrase, jack of all trades, a lot of times with football players, you kind of think, okay, they can do everything, but they're not good at it. Kind of like a Daniel Sorensen, I think, fits into that mold. That'll kind of hit home for Chiefs fans. That's not Amos. He's a good player. He's actually very good at anything you ask him to do. It's just he's not specialized. He's not elite, or even probably not great at either at any particular role. But in what we're assuming Spags' defense is going to be, where there's kind of a very distinguished strong and free safety, he fits better as a free safety. He's got man coverage skills. He can take a slot receiver in man coverage from time to time. He can play deep. He does a fantastic job of staying on top of stuff deep and then being able to attack it ahead of him. He doesn't play the ball the greatest over his head, but again, you're only having a couple man coverage snaps per game pretty much with him. So he fits that role great. Every now and then when he has to drop into the box, he's a big hitter. He's not afraid to throw a shoulder. I don't want him filling interior gaps all game long. He's not that big of a guy, but every now and then you can get away with it. So I think he's kind of that second tier safeties you're looking at. You know, we're going to talk some more safeties, I'm sure, all offseason here in terms of free agency. Oh, and with the team and the draft and safety this, safety that. But he's kind of a second tier guy. So especially with the way the safety market is, I think that you're going to have to pay to get him, but I don't think you're going to have to break the bank. So if you miss out on those top tier guys or you don't want to draft somebody in the first round, I think he's a very good, not even consolation prize, just a good way to save money and still get a very good player.
I'll throw a cornerback into the mix here, and then we're going to have a Thunderdome death match over the last two guys, and I can't wait to watch that.
I already said I'm Tom Hardy. Craig has to be Mel Gibson. It's what it is.
I'm here for it. But first, I'm gonna throw Bradley Roby's name out. We and Matt and Craig were kind of going through this list, and Roby was a guy both B and Maddie kind of wanted to throw out there. I agree with Matt on this, obviously. He's a guy that he's not going to get top tier cornerback money. He's a solid number two type corner. He's not going to be, you know, your number one corner, but I liked him coming out a lot. I think he's a good athlete. I know, Maddie, you said that you think he can play in a variety of techniques.
Yeah, and that's the big thing with Roby is I don't think he's a number one corner, like you said, but you can ask him to play press a little bit. You can ask him to play kind of a pattern match or a mirror technique coming off the line, catch man, whatever you want. You can put him in any system and he's going to be solid. He's not going to turn heads. He's not going to shut down number one wide receivers. But when you're not paying, you know, 14, 15 mil for a guy, that's kind of what you're going to get. And you're completely okay with that if you get Roby. Very quality player. He's got deep speed to run with anybody. He's got enough size that you can keep him on the outside. So he's a very good, again, kind of second tier player that's coming in the free agency this year.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think he is like a second tier kind of corner. And like I don't think he's going to break the bank. I don't think he's going to be a guy that just really affects your cap situation, but he's the kind of player I think the Chiefs should be trying to identify here, you know, in this free agency period. He would fit just fine here in Kansas City. I think the move for them is going to be they're going to have to draft a corner and they're going to have to sign a corner to go with Tre'Varius Ward and Kendall Fuller and Tremont Smith. I don't think you're getting too much out of those guys. Okay, Thunderdome time. We've got two pretty high ticket, relatively high ticket free agents here that I know both Craig and Maddie have really strong takes on. It is time for the Anthony Barr versus Landon Collins Thunderdome. Go. Craig, let's kick this thing off with Anthony Barr. I know it's a guy you're a fan of.
I said last week that I thought that Anthony Barr would be the perfect Sam in a Spagnuolo scheme. We actually brought him up. He's one of the very first guys when we were looking at the 4-3 under and where guys fit and sitting in the hotel room on the rain out day at the Senior Bowl. We actually brought up
so
Anthony
romantic.
Barr. It really was, you know, sitting around scheming football, talking about Anthony Barr.
You're one to speak, yeah. Taking a nap with your buddy.
I was out. I was so tired.
He's in Minnesota right now. He is going to be a free agent. They are not going to pay him. They have $6 million in cap space right now for 2019. They need to add several pieces. They're going to have to make some hard decisions there. Anthony Barr has basically already come out and said that he's not going to be able to probably get back there. So he's a guy that, coming out of college, coming out of UCLA, he was an edge player. He had 22 and a half sacks basically in 2 years, switching from offense to defense, learning how to play edge. 22 and a half sacks off the edge, came to Minnesota, just this athletic, very versatile, very rangy player, and they moved him to off-ball linebackers. He's been a second-level guy almost the entire time that he's been in the NFL. So that means he's got to stack and shed. He's got to play run gaps. He's got to run in coverage. That's basically what this Sam linebacker position is. It's a guy who can do a little bit of everything, a good rusher, good in coverage, good against the run. Anthony Barr can be that guy. Now, he's going to be pricey because there are going to be edge rushers that are going to get paid this offseason. There aren't a ton of them that are getting free. So he's probably a guy that's going to be around the $10 to $13 million range, depending on if a team is playing him at off-ball or playing him as an edge. I think the Chiefs could bring him in. I think he helps solidify that spot. I think that's money well spent, even though Steve Spagnuolo doesn't typically pay guys like that. But he's a thing that can make that entire front tick and make it make a good run defense, good pass rush. It's exactly what this defense needs to take it over the top.
All right, so I was debating my strategy for this Thunderdome winner take all, one man leaves alive session here. And I decided that we're just going to go aggressive like the Spagnuolo defense is going to be. So, Craig, can you tell me how many times Devin Kennard, the starting Sam linebacker for the Giants when Spagnuolo was there, played over two-thirds of the snaps?
You know, Devin Kennard is not the same player that Anthony Barr is. So
that sounds like roughly two times. Yeah. So, in those two times, this is our Sam linebacker here, this guy that we're wanting to pay double-digit millions of dollars to play two-thirds of the snap, two games. I think it actually was three games over the 2 years that they really had that defense going. Okay, Barr's a better player than Kennard. I'll give you that. So here's the next question. And this is rhetorical. We don't need any input right now. This is my time. So here it is. It comes nickel package. We're bringing somebody off the field. You're either going to have to take Barr off, you're paying $12, $14 million to take Anthony Hitchens off, who you're paying $9 million to. You're going to take O'Daniel off, like your best coverage linebacker, so to speak, or at least you're hoping for at this point in time. Okay, maybe he's cheap, but you want to keep your fastest linebacker out there. Or you're going to take off another pass rusher. Are we sure Barr's ready to kick down, put his hand in the dirt, and be a defensive end? The last time he did that was what? Against Pac-12 offensive linemen when they still all ran the Chip Kelly offense? I don't know about this one. Not for real, though, I think Anthony Barr would be a great signing, guys. I'm not trying to say
But Breland speaks, though.
I was going to try to be the arbitrator here or the judge or something. I was going to drop some Breland Speaks shade, but you kind of beat me to it. Maddie, would you rather have Breland Speaks or Anthony Barr rushing the passer? Go.
Well, okay, no, so here's my thing. If I'm going purely off the ability to rush the passer, why am I going to pay Anthony Barr pretty much the same amount as Justin Houston or Dee Ford, who are already here? I mean, I get it. They're only here for a short period of time, but do we think Barr is a better pass rusher than either one of them?
No, but he's better in coverage.
How much is he going to be? I guess my thing is, how much is he going to be in coverage? Like, he's a fantastic kind of Swiss Army knife. And again, in a good way, not a poor man's, you know, he's okay at stuff. He's very good at all of it, but he's kind of to cover everything rather than for a specific fix. And I'm just not sure that they're going to use the Sam that way. If they do, he's a great idea. If the plan is to keep the Sam out there and to drop his hand into the dirt, rush the passer, be a kind of every down player, then that changes the philosophy of what I think I'm looking at here. But as of right now, it just doesn't seem like their Sam is a player that's going to play that often. He would rather keep defensive ends out there and then mix and match his NASCAR packages. And again, Barr may fit perfectly there, just looking at his past. So looking at Spagnuolo's past, we're going with Landon Collins. I think this is a popular pick for everybody, but here's some fun stuff. In 2016, In 2016, Landon Collins by PFF was graded a 92.5 overall grade. That's the sixth highest all time for a safety since they've been grading the NFL. This is his second year in the NFL, second year with Spagnuolo. He started playing in the box more. This rookie year, he was playing deep over 50% of the time. That dropped down to about 33% of the time in his second year. He's playing in the box. He has the most run stops in the NFL that year for a safety. He has the most tackles for a loss in the NFL for a safety those years. He's a complete force playing in the box. And oh yeah, his coverage grade got even better when he was asked to play man coverage on tight ends, or he was asked to play these kind of shallow hook zones. What's something that's killed the Chiefs these last couple of years? New defensive system, so it changes. We haven't been able to stop tight ends. We've been getting killed over the middle of the field and gash in the run game. Landon Collins actively fixes every single one of those problems, and he does it at a position that we've been super weak at because we just simply don't know if Eric Berry's going to be able to play, if his spirit's going to be up for it, or if his heel's going to be okay with it. So you get Landon Collins, you allow Spagnuolo to do anything he wants to with his defense. You can play any coverage, you can rotate guys in and out. That was a huge part of why they were so multiple with the Giants, is they could have Collins go deep, man coverage, come up in the box. We're going to let Craig tear apart my argument now. I did the same to him, so I'll be quiet. Let him do his thing now. But I think this is the answer. Landon Collins.
Okay. Okay. You ready for my rebuttal?
This will be good.
I love Landon Collins, and we need to sign him right now. We also need to sign Anthony Barr. Both of these guys need to be joining the Chiefs defense. No, Landon Collins needs to be on this team. Spags' defense is predicated on having a good box safety. If Eric Berry isn't healthy, they need a good box safety. Landon Collins just makes all the sense in the world. I need him on this team. Anthony Barr is a luxury pick, but I also need him on this team too. For me, so I can cover the defense and be happy, guys. Don't you want me to be happy?
Not really.
I want you to be happy.
Mad Crate's kind of fun. I paid $100 for the pay-per-view of this. This was so disappointing. Yeah. Like, this was just, come on, guys. Like, no. Landon Collins is the answer.
What do you have against this? This was a fantastic fight. This went exactly how it was supposed to go.
What, Landon coming, Collins come, wins? Yeah.
Coming from the winner.
Yeah. I think it was an unfair fight from the get-go, though, because Craig kind of got the position that's less defined. He got a player that hasn't been with Spagnuolo before. And quite simply, we're all tired of listening to the safety saga in Kansas City right now. Nobody's going to vote against Landon Collins, who was literally elite with the same exact coach before. It makes too much sense. Now, I will make an actual video of me pouring one out as soon as the Giants put the tag on him, because that's just the way being a Chiefs fan works. But until then, I'm going to be banging my chest for Landon Collins of the Chiefs.
If he hits the market, he's the best player to hit the free agent market this year. In position, anything. He's the best player to hit the market this year.
Wow. That's quite the take there,
Craig. If you play him in the right spot, I agree. As long as you're not asking him to play deep.
You're right. Right. You're not wrong. All right, let's jump in the mailbag here. We got a lot of questions to cover. And we will cover them right now with Ask Goose This, asking, curious why a Mike Smith would jump so quickly with this defensive coordinator change, and do you think we'll see any other changes to the defensive staff? Well, we already saw one today, so.
Oh, yeah, they were my joke.
That's true. Yeah, Mark DeLeon is gone as an inside linebackers coach. I don't think that he's the last one either. I do think that we're going to see a little more shakeup. I'm not sure that Emmett Thomas is going to be with this team, whether that be just him retiring or just being done. I don't know. I assume that Al Harris will be with this team as well. Britt Reed could probably do with a move of some sort for my sake. So we'll see kind of how this defensive coaching staff shapes up. But Mike Smith is the one guy that we all kind of wanted to be here. And, you know, we pounded the table a little bit for him to be the defensive coordinator. So him not getting that defensive coordinator job and then promptly getting fired just kind of says that they want their own staff. They want all new, which is why I think that Britt Reed might get moved, because it does seem that maybe that defensive coaching staff is going to be gutted a little bit. Otherwise, why would you move on from the guy who transformed your, you know, your players, your pass rush. He coached defensive line before. This isn't a big deal. It's not like he was just 3-4 outside linebackers.
Right.
That's the only thing he's ever done. He was defensive line. He could coach this defensive line. So if he's gone, that should mean that everybody on that coaching staff is gone.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think a big thing is you can't keep somebody that Spagnuolo doesn't want to be keep around. So if you've already started making moves like this, now maybe these guys did leave on their own. There's been kind of some iffy reports out there about Mike Smith being fired, or and then that got redacted, so that's no longer out there in the article. So you don't know if that was true, if somebody was just kind of piecing something together. Same thing, we still don't know with De Leon now. So we don't know how these guys are leaving, but my thought process always, especially in the Chiefs situation where you're kind of giving so much control to the defensive coordinator, you've got to let him bring in his guys. If he wants to keep someone around after talking to him and meeting with him, that's absolutely fine. But if he's got an idea for who he wants or a vision, just you have to let him do his thing. So I say you just gut the entire defensive staff. Anybody that he wants to bring back, you bring back. I don't know if anybody should keep their head positional coach job. Like, if you want to bring back a Britt Reid as an assistant D-line coach or back to the quality control coach as some kind of just different role with the team, that's absolutely fine. I don't know if you can keep anybody at the position coach that they are right now with the staff turnover. It just doesn't make sense to kind of handcuff somebody like that, because then it's just a built-in excuse going forward. I kind of hidden story, I guess, with the Mike Smith thing too. He's good friends with Mike Pettine. Like, he might have just wanted to coach with a friend of his. Like, he has a good relationship with him. He's definitely part of this Bob Sutton tree. Maybe he had a very good relationship with Bob Sutton too, but stuff coming out of Green Bay says that the two are very good friends. He very much just might want to coach with a friend of his. As soon as he found out that he wasn't getting a promotion here for whatever reason, he's like, okay, well, I'm going to go coach with one of my good friends who happens to need my assistance right now. So it could be something as little as that.
Thanks for stealing my take.
That's
okay. I was going to go the Pettine route. At Rob Williams, 1971, who is coming back?
Well, you have editing power.
That's true. Who, Rob Williams, 71, who is coming back and who might be coming back based on the play and reality of the salary cap? So I tried to isolate this. Let's not talk about Justin Houston, Dee Ford, and Eric Berry. We've talked about them a lot. Let's kind of take those third, you know, that second tier of guys that, you know, might have some questions about whether or not they're back. I'm going to ask each one of you guys this question about each of these. So we'll start with Matt. Is Alan Bailey back next year?
You know, and my initial thought is just immediately no for this because of what his salary's been, the fact that he's a part-time player that doesn't have a great like addition to the pass rush. But then I'm thinking about it, I don't know what his value is to the NFL. He's clearly not going to get the same level of contract he just got. That was given to him by a GM that liked him, that saw him develop, and then we've since seen him kind of stall out in his progression. So he's not really going to get any better than he is right now. He is what he is. So if you can pay Alan Bailey to be a 1.5 kind of down effort rusher that pushes the pocket, can play out on the edge versus the run pretty well, I could see a use for him coming back in a rotation on the defensive line, especially a defensive line that's going to rotate pretty heavily between tackles and DNs. But if you're talking anywhere close to the money he was just getting, anywhere in that $7 to $9 million range, if you're getting close to that, there's no way they're going to bring him back for what he offers, in my opinion.
Yeah, hard pass on that if it was near that figure. Okay, Craig, talk to me about Reggie Ragland. Is he back next year?
Oh, my goodness. This pains me. He is my son. I love Reggie Ragland, and he is the Chiefs' best coverage linebacker in the last quarter of the year. But
pick machine.
Pick machine. Especially in the red zone. Nah, it's time for Reggie to go. Reggie does not fit in this scheme very well, especially using a Sam that kind of plays a little closer to the line of scrimmage and needs to offer a little bit of rush capability. Reggie's just not that guy. I mean, he's already been ousted from 1-4-3 that he arguably fit better than this one. So I don't see him sticking around this year. I know the Chiefs are finally having to pay the draft pick this season or in this upcoming draft for Reggie Ragland, but he just seems like a man without a home. And even though it's a fourth round draft pick and he's not that expensive, he doesn't really play special teams. I don't think he really is going to offer anything this year, so I think they're going to want that roster spot back, so I'm pouring one out for Reggie.
That special teams little nugget there was really important too. I mean, you can't have backup linebackers that can't play special teams. I mean, that's
linebackers.
A problem.
Linebackers. Right. I mean, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Did I say linebackers?
No, you did. You did. I'm just emphasizing it. You can have backups at some other positions that don't play special teams, but linebacker especially, that's your bread and butter at special teams. You can't have linebackers that can't play special teams.
Right. I'll answer the question about Steven Nelson. I do not think Steven Nelson is back this year. Steven Nelson wants to get paid. And if you have followed him on Twitter or if you've been on Twitter at all, you know that Steven Nelson wants to get paid. And I'm kind of over him anyway. I think, you know, watching, you know, he doesn't turn to locate the ball ever. So your ball production is going to always be limited with him. He's out here to try to get as much money as he can, and more power to him. Good for you. Have fun. And hopefully you are somewhere significant on the compensatory pick formula. Moving on, at Low Lip McGee one asks, we can all pretty much agree that Brett Veach pretty much botched this last draft, his first as a general manager. If he doesn't nail this 2019 draft, could he be on the hot seat going forward? So, yeah, I think this draft is critical for Brett Veach for a lot of reasons. Obviously, you know, the Chiefs had major issues on the defensive side of the ball this year, and they invested a lot of their draft capital last year, pretty much all of their draft capital last year on the defensive side of the football. I do kind of give him a little bit of a mulligan because they didn't have a first-round pick. And, you know, maybe, just maybe, Breland Speaks can have a little success here in this 4-3 under. Maybe. That's a conversation for another day. But, this draft is critical for him. And this is critical for this team. They need to get some talent that can start. They probably need to get two or three starters from this defensive draft class. Like, that would be ideal. At least two. Three would be a cherry on top. This is a critical draft for him, and if he doesn't nail it, and if this draft class isn't able to contribute, they're gonna start having some Brett Veach questions around here.
No, absolutely. That draft doesn't look great from last year. It's hard to come out and say that a draft that is 1 year old is something that's questionable, but at this point in time, you kind of have to think that. There's not a reason yet. There hasn't been a flash of a reason to be super pumped up about it. So kind of backing on what Kent said, this draft at least has to give you, either you have to get something from last year's crop, or this year has to show you something early on. Or if you're sitting here as the owner of this team, and especially if you don't get to the Super Bowl, which would alleviate all of this, you just kind of have to be sitting back and thinking, I don't really know where we're going with this situation right now. The direction this team seems up in the air. So he really needs to just hit something, just anything here, and we'll be good to go.
Yeah, and not only is it that he needs to nail the draft, he's also got to nail free agency. Andy Reid needed to nail the defensive coordinator hire. They need to nail all the defensive staff. Like, there is so much weight on the next two seasons with Patrick Mahomes being cheap still. They have to get it right this offseason. This is the kickoff spot to get them another game or two in the postseason and finish this thing off.
Took us 28 minutes to talk about Patrick Mahomes. That's pretty remarkable. The other thing I do want to add this year, I think some of what Brett Veach has done does deserve some credit too. Like, I think the draft was rough, and I think, you know, I did not like the draft at all. I do think he's done a phenomenal job of identifying some guys that have been tremendous value. Damien Williams, Andrew Wiley, Austin Ryder, guys like that. He's done a really good job of, like, Jordan Lucas. I mean, you go and go through the list. Those are all Veach guys, and I really like what they've brought. But he needs to maximize what he does with this draft capital this year. It's pretty critical. At D Johnston 29 asks, Hassan Reddick as a possible Sam trade target, Craig.
Man, I do really enjoy Hassan Reddick, but I just don't know how he fits as a Sam. and it's specifically from a run defense standpoint. He's a light guy. He's 230 pounds. You know, I talked about Anthony Barr earlier. He's closer to 260. That's a big difference. What he does currently and what he did well in college was kind of a weak side end or weak side linebacker. That's kind of the way that the Cardinals play him now. He's a good pass rusher. He is definitely another one of these jack of all trades guys that can do a lot of things and do them well. I would just worry about putting him on the strong side there and asking him to set a hard edge and sort of funnel things back. I think he's better in space without having to stack and shed guys.
Yeah, Reddick is an interesting guy because coming out, everybody was kind of wondering, do you play him in a position to rush the passer off the edge? Because his tape was phenomenal doing that. And then you look at his size and his athletic testing, and he seems like he'd be a good fit for an off-ball linebacker. So you're debating where you put him, what you want to do. And when you kind of hear how this defense is potentially going to lay out, he sounds like an ideal fit as a strong side linebacker. But then, as Craig said, he's just really light. There's going to be plenty of tight ends in the NFL that are going to be able to bully him, and he has to beat tight ends one-on-one to stop the run as a Sam. That's like his main goal on first down, is to be able to handle the tight ends one-on-one. He's got to set the edge, but then he's also got to be able to beat the tight end. He can't just hold the edge and force it to somebody else. His job is to beat that block. I'm not sure you're going to get the consistency out of him doing that at this point in time, but if the price was right and you wanted to take a flyer on it, remember, the Cardinals were potentially shipping him around last year. Now, this is a different coaching staff. Things are entirely different now. But if you got him for the right price, you could bring him in, see what happens. Worst case scenario, you have him cheap-ish for the next couple of years, then you don't bring him back. But I wouldn't go out of my way to make sure you make that trade for him.
Yeah, my biggest concern with that idea was the run game. And, you know, the thing, like, I understand the logic, right? Like, I understand why the question is being posed, because he has such a versatile background. He tested really well. You know, Britt Reed, if he's still around, coached Hassan Reddick for a while too. There's that connection. I think we talked about that earlier this year. So I understand the logic of why you would want to, you know, consider that. But there is some question marks about his ability in the run game, and I think it's fair, but I understand the logic why someone would ask that question. At DRolf15 asks, what are the chances that Veach tries to trade up in the first round of the draft? Well, he traded up for the first two picks of his first draft. He traded up for both Breland Speaks and Derek Nnadi. I have a feeling there's a decent chance that Brett Veach is wanting to make a move up into the first, higher up into the first round. I think that's entirely logical. Maddie?
Yeah, so, sorry, I was looking at the wrong question. This is why I don't get control of the rundown, guys. The chances that Brett Veach moves up in the draft, I'd say it's pretty high right now. We have enough capital on the first two rounds, or even if you want to throw the third round in there, you can make a move there. I hope you don't see another move kind of into the middle of the third round. Like, I get it. If a guy's dropping and you want to get him, I'm fully okay with that. But the move up for Breland Speaks where we got him, and that was probably more the player than the move up. But that small kind of move up there in the middle of the second round, and then the move up to get Nnadi in the third round, I don't dislike those moves. But if you're going to plan on trading up, I would rather trade up to get a upper tier player in the first round when you're sitting here with two second round picks. I don't need to move up in the second round right now. I'd rather get that more surefire thing in the first round if that was the goal going in. So it's all about how the board's going to shake down. But again, I'd be looking, you're sitting at 29 right now, to get into the 25 to 20 range, I think it's completely realistic. You can do that without giving too much capital later on in the draft and still have plenty of draft picks that can make a difference. That's the way I'm looking. Or you can do my strategy, just get rid of every pick after the fourth round, which we don't have one. So all you're going to do is pick in the first 2 days, trade away every other pick you have to maybe get one more late day two pick, and we'll just roll with four draft picks and undrafted free agents.
I'm going to say that he's going to stay put. The more and more we look at the board, there are some guys, and granted, it's silly season right now. I mean, we've got Ed Oliver playing off-ball linebacker today. So, you know, take everything for what you will. But there seems to be some big pushes especially at like offensive line, quarterback, that are shooting some guys up the draft board a little bit. I think that the Chiefs can sit at 29 and still be able to get a pretty good talent. There's a lot of defensive talent in this draft. I think we all want to go defense early, especially if there's a really good player at a position of need, which the Chiefs have plenty on that side of the ball. So I think that they can stay put and still get a good player this year and then move up in the second to maybe catch another guy.
At LWOS, Mike Wilson asks, if you could move a mountain for one somewhat realistic draft prospect, who would it be? Okay, so I think it's basically like a guy that might have a chance to be within striking distance of the Chiefs. Maybe call it a trade up. So maybe someone that like maybe just falls out the bottom of the draft, or out the front of the draft into the like back half of the draft. You just trade up for him, maybe like to like 18th or something. Let's go with something like that. I'll go with Ed Oliver.
Oh, you dirty, dirty dog.
No, okay.
Off-ball linebacker.
Timeout, Matthew. I normally go last on a lot of these questions, so you can just go ahead and deal with having your answer robbed. Ed Oliver, people are getting crazy right now. The defensive lineman from Houston, Ed Oliver, some people thought he was the consensus best player in this draft heading into the season. He is a phenomenal talent, but people are like freaking out because they don't know if he can maintain a weight of 280 pounds. They don't know exactly what to do with him, where to play him. I don't know where he would fit exactly in Kansas City, but just take him and figure it out, because that guy is an incredible talent. He's good at football. Take good football players. Just figure it out. Just figure it out. Because the guy is a phenomenal talent. I think he's a top five talent in this draft. Just find a way to use him. I don't think you're going to make a mistake taking a great talent like that.
I would love Ed Oliver. Ed Oliver would make me very, very happy. But I'm going to go with a guy who actually might be there kind of in the mid-20s. Byron Murphy, my guy, cornerback out of Washington. He's a little bit smaller than a guy like Greedy Williams. Greedy Williams seems to be going a little bit higher because he's longer, a little more athletic. He definitely has a higher ceiling than Byron Murphy. But Byron Murphy is ready to come in and start and be a number one corner right this very moment. He's very technical. He's very fluid. He's very good at everything he does at the cornerback position. He's got great ball skills, and he can fit in any technique. He's a guy that I would love, love, love for the Chiefs to go out and get. And he seems to be a guy that he got a round two grade by the advisory board, which is baffling to me because I mean, he's way up there on my list. Yeah, Byron Murphy.
He's this year's Jair Alexander. Sorry, go, hey, Matty.
I'm here.
So since my first and second choice have now been taken, you can see that we talk about the draft together often. So for the point of the question of moving a mountain, I think I was kind of looking at this as trading up into like that 15-18 range. Like moving a mountain to me said we're trading up a long ways. With Murphy gone and Ed Oliver gone, I don't know if there's somebody realistically that I'm planning on moving up that far for. Like if you say Bose is falling down there or Quinnen Williams, obviously I'm jumping up there, but that's not realistic. So I don't, with those two guys gone, I don't know if I'm making that big of a move. So just trading up, let's say into the early 20s, a little bit less of a mountain. We're kind of moving a hill here, but I would do it for Jakai Polite. I know that's not going to fly for everybody. He's a little bit short. He doesn't have the perfect size for an edge in any kind. And even with this new system, he might not have a perfect fit. I don't care. This guy has the most natural pass rushing instincts in his class. That includes Nick Bosa. He is a better, just pure get after the quarterback player. You can put him on the edge, split him out wide, line him up over the tackle. His get off, his flexibility, the ability to just get after the quarterback is insane. For that reason, I do see how people are going to get a little scared of him, thinking similar to Dee Ford. No, he's a lot more polished than Dee Ford was coming out. More moves, knows how to use them better. There's a lot more to him than that, but he has that same level of just pure ability to sack the quarterback. You watch him in college. He's playing in the SEC, so he's not playing against terrible competition. He's getting around offensive tackles that are still practically getting out of their pass sets. And it's not just always because of poor play. He literally just has that good of a get off the line. Being a little bit shorter, he always has the leverage advantage. He has the ability to dip under offensive tackles before they even have a chance to get their hands on him. I would trade up for him a few spots. Not going to be a guy for everybody because of the shorter arms. I think he's only going to be about 6'2", 250 pounds. But his athleticism, I actually think that you have a chance. You have to see how he looks in drills to play him off the ball a little bit as that Sam, given the size. But your big thing is you're getting him to play for the ability to rush the passer. I think he can stand up tight ends enough to handle that position, but that's kind of a big position change that you would just kind of deal with once you got him and got to see him do that.
Yeah, that's a fascinating one. And I feel like we're pretty much just going to try to pigeonhole every player into Sam now, just to think about, like, we talked about Ed Oliver at Sam a while back. Like, today, we were just like, maybe. Just because, like, I mean, you know, if you can get dynamic over there, that could be fun.
Oh, no, I would try to play him at Leo would be my first move. I think that at the combine, you might see him take some off-ball linebacker drills because of his size. Like, unlike Brian Burns, is another small player, but he's got a big frame. Like, people are going to expect him to be able to put on weight. Polite doesn't have that same frame. He's pretty thick, but he's short, so he's still light. Right. He's not getting a lot bigger. I think you're going to see him just take a couple reps. And he doesn't look bad in space the few times he's been there. He looks like a good athlete. So if he looks fluid enough just pedaling around, you might consider that. And he would be more of a Kiwanuka type Sam that you're going to put more with the hand in the dirt rather than take off the field or put him in coverage. He's going to do very minimal in coverage, but it's just an option if you see him look good at it. Really, I'm just getting him on my team because he's my favorite player in this draft.
Fair enough. At Master Lamalis asks, with Kansas City's first five picks, what positions do you think they will pick in this draft? New scheme means new draft board, so I'm curious to see what you guys are thinking. Okay, let's do this. Matt, tell me who the Chiefs will pick positionally in the first round. Go.
Oh, just guess. Without free agency, I'm just going to stick to a – I'm going to say pass rusher because I can't – it'd be defensive end or Sam linebacker. I don't know what way they're going to go with the Sam right now. So we're getting somebody to rush the passer from the edge, whether stand up or hand in the dirt.
Craig, give me a second round prospect – or second round position.
Corner has to go corner. They need a guy at corner. Like you said, they got to have a free agent and a rookie come in this year. I think second rounder's a good spot for that.
I think there's a sweet spot for the second round at corner too. Okay, I'll throw a little curveball here.
He's going to say offensive player.
He's going to say tight end.
I'm going to say tight end. I'm going to say tight end. You jerks. I mean, I can't have any fun. I'll give you the
steal your thunder. We'll steal your Jalen.
I'll say third. Steal your Jalen. I'll say third round too. You'll go. They might go offensive player in the third round too. If a running back, or if not, maybe a defensive lineman. It just kind of depends on how the board falls. I wouldn't be surprised if three of the first four picks are defense. But you know, like that third round pick, depending on who's there, it could be another offensive player too. At Colpy02 asks, any players the Chiefs could target at 29 who would fit the traditional Sam role in the 4-3 under front if the team does move on from Justin Houston?
I gave my answer with Jakai Polite, just depending on how you see him move. And I, real quick, it's going to make it hard for you guys. I don't think there's a great fit for that particular position from a draft. Mm-hmm. It's just not a position that happens in college. If you're playing an overhang in college, like they're going to be playing here, you're playing smaller players. You're playing against more like spread offenses. You're getting a safety or a small linebacker that plays the Sam role pretty much all the time in college. You're going to get a kind of transitional player if you're taking this into the NFL. You're either getting an edge that's a little too small to be always on the edge, or you're taking an edge player that just didn't work out, or a big linebacker, something like that. So this position doesn't exist in college. Your best bet was Josh Allen. He's going to be gone well before then. So like I said, Polite, if he moves well, would be the only guy that I come up with off the top of my head that is the first round kind of player.
Yeah, Matt's exactly right. We've talked about several guys kind of through the draft. We saw a couple at the Senior Bowl, Benbenoku, Sutton Smith, guys that they're trying at off-ball linebacker that did play edge, kind of guys that offer just a little bit of pass rushing juice, but they're not going to get drafted high for that sort of thing. So they're trying to play in this sort of hybrid role. We saw them a little bit. Those guys are not first-round guys. Those guys are late in the draft guys. Maybe a guy that you take a chance on, you hope to develop. But, yeah, he nailed it. Polite and Josh Allen are really the only two guys that I think in the first round really suit that role.
Yeah, I tend to agree with both of you. I don't think there's a ton of guys there that really make a ton of sense there in that range. And day three really could be a place that they try to find someone like maybe Ben Banigou if he's around, someone like that, just to see what they got there. Sutton Smith played well. He really did play well.
He was kind of
surprising. At CountryBoy567 asks, how far will John Elway go to get Drew Locke? I am buying this Elway Drew Locke connection. And I will say this. I'm going to say this real quick. I am coming around on Drew Locke a little bit. I did not like his early tape. I thought he was ungood. I thought he was a fourth round grade. I've creeped up on him. I think, you know, the last couple games, I think he finished really strong. I saw command at all three levels. I saw a little creativity. I saw a little bit of athleticism on the run. I saw obviously the arm talent and the fearlessness to put balls where he wants to put them. And I'm kind of coming around on Drew Locke a little bit. I don't think I'd bet the farm on him, and I'd still rather, you know, Denver go and lock him up and I wasn't even on purpose, but I wouldn't mind if Denver kind of unloaded a bunch of their assets to take a risk on him, because he still is a risk. But you know, I am coming around on him a little bit. At One Lost Wizard asks, would you trade Tyreek Hill or Chris Jones for two number one picks?
Ooh, so if I get my pick this year, if I get one of them this year, potentially, because I think there is the talent to replace them or similar to them if you are high enough up in this draft. So if I'm getting a top five pick this year and I can draft Quinnen Williams or Ed Oliver to essentially slide into that slot that I'm trading away Chris Jones, or I can get DK Metcalf or Harmon to do the exact same thing for Tyreek Hill. I mean, it's a lofty. I get it. It's the chances of them being as good as those guys are not that high. But if I get two first round picks, if I get a draft, a direct replacement from somebody like I just mentioned for them right now, plus pocket another one going forward, I would be quite tempted to let one of them go with that a top five draft pick in return, plus another draft pick next year.
Yeah, if it's anything below outside of the top 15, it's a no for me, especially for Chris Jones. I just think that Chris Jones is on his way up. I think the 4-3 under, when they're playing that in the base, he's going to destroy. He's going to eat out of this defense. I think that this year is going to be replicated next year, as good as this year was. So I think that's a guy that it's very tough to replicate unless, like Matt said, you're getting Quinnen Williams, which I would gladly trade for. But Tyreek, on the other hand, Tyreek and Pat have a real chemistry here. Tyreek is, you know, one of two guys that went for over 1,300 yards. I think he's too important to this offense. Even though he may not be like the upper echelon of receiver, I still think that he's a guy that you need on this offense to make it work. So I don't think that I'd do it, surprisingly.
I don't think I would either. And I'm, you know, I love acquiring draft capital. You guys know that. But
well, there was no top picks Hill included, so Kent's out.
Yeah, right. I mean, Tyreek Hill, he's a top 10 receiver. I don't think he's not upper echelon. Like, he's not Odell Beckham or anything. But Pat and Ty together is crazy explosive. And I think that connection is just getting started. I think Tyreek Hill is still an ascending player. I think everybody since Tyreek Hill was drafted has been trying to find Tyreek Hill. And that's why, you know, some guys, like someone tried to say Isaiah McKenzie was Tyreek Hill a couple years ago. Like, it's just absurd. Tyreek Hill's on a completely different planet. Chris Jones, same thing, ascending player. Yeah, they're both about to get more expensive, but they're both still really young, and they both are definitely still ascending. So those are two guys I probably am not trading either of those guys for two first-round picks, which is crazy that I wouldn't. At NBendian asks, do you believe that Brett Veach knew about the 4-3 transition last year? If so, do you think that narrowed the search for the defensive coordinator?
Okay, so I've been seeing a lot of this kind of floating around, and part of that's because Breland Speaks fits really well into a 4-3 as a strong side defensive end, into a 4-3 under. Dorian O'Daniel fits well into it as well. But that's it. I mean, Anthony Hitchens may fit in it. I think he fits better into it than he fits into the 3-4, but he's still going to have to read similar keys. There's only going to be two off-ball, real truly off-ball linebackers, but he is going to play Sam. That will help him a little bit more. But I just can't see how you would waste a year basically drafting and acquiring players for a defense that hasn't been transitioned yet. That just doesn't make much sense to me. I mean, the argument can be made that they were gearing up for 2019 for Patrick Mahomes and everything like that, and that Mahomes this year really surprised them, and they really, you know, wanted to put it off another year, and they were just gonna, it was gonna be a 2-year build on the defensive side of the ball and make the switch. I just think that NFL GMs aren't playing that sort of long game when their job is on the line. I mean, this defense was awful, and Brett Veach is being criticized a lot for how awful this defense is because he helped build it. So why would he put himself in that position if you know he wasn't going to see results in year one? So I don't think that had anything to do with it.
Oh, you guys almost got out of a whole lab podcast without a rant. Now you're getting one.
Oh, no.
This is the most...
90 seconds. You have 90 seconds.
This is one of the most ridiculous things going around right now. A team did not go into a draft knowing for sure that they were going to fail miserably on one side of the ball, so miserably that they were going to have to remove the entire coaching staff that coaches that style of defense and replace it with a very specific 4-3 under or over defense the following year. I understand how it makes sense, like Craig said. There looks to be better fits for this 4-3. But in no way, shape, or form did the team just say, ah, heck with it. This year the defense is going to be bad. Let's start preparing for once they fail. That's not how the NFL is going to work, and people's jobs are on the line. Why would Bob Sutton saddle up for this? He knows very well how these guys are fitting into his defense when they're coming in. You can't give somebody a player and say, oh, yeah, you know, I know he doesn't understand, you know, what you're doing here or work with you, but we're just preparing for the next year. You can't sell that to your team, to your coaches. And guys in the NFL, as people joke around, they might be stupid with some usage or the way they grade prospects coming to the draft. People in the NFL really aren't dumb. They're quite intelligent people. They'll understand if you were trying to push them out ahead of time, and it just simply doesn't work. Beyond that, there was no guarantee the Chiefs were going to get a defensive coordinator that wanted to run a 4-3. People wanted to say that Todd Bowles was a guy that we were waiting for, and he just got snapped up before we could get him. Okay, he doesn't run a 4-3, so we bring him in after drafting for a 4-3, or was he not an option either? It just makes no sense to be working ahead like that, no matter how much it seems like guys fit better. They drafted players they liked. They had a vision for them. The vision isn't as clear to fans who see it from a completely different viewpoint. That's okay. It happens. You hope it doesn't continue to happen. But in no way, shape, or form was the team drafting for an entirely different defense, coaching staff, personnel grouping, or anything like that the previous year.
Yeah, there's no chance that that was happening. And, I mean, Bob Sutton would have been a lame duck coordinator. And
some would argue he was.
Right. Andy went out of his way to defend him. They talked about, you know, there was passive blame of the personnel the entire offseason. They're retooling to give Bob Sutton what he needs to succeed. Well, that didn't work. And now they're moving on. Now they are making the decision to go to Steve Spagnuolo go to a 4-3 under. Some of the personnel that they selected absolutely makes more sense, but I think that's more coincidence. I think that is, frankly, a miscalculation of a player's capabilities. They thought Brilliant Speaks could be an edge, and he cannot play as a stand-up edge. It's just, it's, no, it can't happen. It won't happen, and it never will happen, and it will, it would have, it wasn't going to succeed. Even if Breland Speaks lost 15 pounds this offseason, it wasn't going to work. That's it for this week's episode. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you next week, and hopefully nothing too crazy happens before then. Thanks. Bye.
But seriously, Anthony Barr.
Support for this show comes from Fundrise. Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes, and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/fox. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure, it's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.